And now, here's Ben Heppner.
When I approach the big aria at the end, called the Gralserzählung, In Fernem Land, there's one thing that I always have in my mind that I think seems to work in whatever production that you're doing, and that is that you envision the entire audience, and the audience for Lohengrin, of course, is chorus members and the other cast members on stage, and the audience, and I would envision them all as 6 or 7 year olds. And they are here at the library at story time. And so I need to tell them, in a land far away, not too far from here, a place is called Montsalvat. And I just continue to talk about the story that way. And it takes a couple of pages to finally move into the really serious meat of the aria. So you're just talking to these kids and telling your story. And hopefully their eyes get wider and wider and they start to understand what magic this really is. The darker side of Lohengrin is perhaps something that one doesn't see right off the top, and perhaps the fact that he's already coming armed with his return ticket is part of it that's underneath, that would probably color his entire time here. And I guess he has to fall in love immediately because his time is limited. I sometimes wonder whether he really relishes his job or not, because he's been sent on this mission and he's done it, and he's rescued this damsel in distress from her predicament. But, you know, he doesn't get to stick around. So, I mean, I often wonder what his relationship is with Montsalvat and the Graal, whether he is a little bit ticked off with his dad, Parsifal. So that's kind of the thing that I look upon it as darker side, that he's maybe not really happy in his work.
In the final act of Lohengrin, the knight tries to reassure Elsa by renewing his pledge of love. He tells her that he gladly gave up an idyllic life to be with her. But this seems to unsettle Elsa. She says she's afraid that he'll leave to return to that life. Then she's unable to control herself and asks the forbidden questions. Den Namen sag mir an. Tell me your name. Where did you come from? Before he can answer, Telramund and 4 noblemen attack the knight, and he kills Telramund with a single blow. Then he orders that Telramund's body be taken to the king. There he will answer Elsa's questions. In the famous narrative, In Fernem Land, In a Distant Land, the knight reveals that he's a servant of the Grail. His father is Parsifal, and his name is Lohengrin. Now he must return to his home in Montsalvat. The people beg him to reconsider, but the swan boat arrives to take him away. Ortrud triumphantly tells Elsa that the swan is her young brother, Gottfried. Ortrud had cast a spell on him, and he's lost to Brabant forever. Lohengrin kneels in prayer, and miraculously, the swan is transformed back into Gottfried. But Lohengrin vanishes, Ortrud dies, and Elsa falls lifeless to the ground. In order of vocal appearance, Lohengrin is Ben Heppner, and Elsa, Karita Mattila. King Henry is René Pape, and the 4 noblemen, Gioacchino Livigni, Eduardo Valdez, Brian Davis, and Richard Vernon. Ortrud is Luana de Vol. Telramund, who appears but does not sing, is Richard Paul Fink. Gottfried, a mute role, is Lance Chantilly's Wurtz. The conductor is Philippe Auguin. Now, millions of people who have never heard of Wagner know the bridal march that we'll hear in a few minutes. In this country, we tend to call it Here Comes the Bride, but Wagner was quite irritated at its popularity, even though he included it in concerts that he gave of excerpts from his own operas. Like the one he gave in 1855, where it was heard for the first time in England. Ben Heppner has referred to Lohengrin as Wagner operetta, because it's more lightly orchestrated. He says there's also a certain lightness surrounding Lohengrin himself, who talks about aus Glanz und Wonne komm ich her, the light and joy that he comes from. But Heppner sees Lohengrin as rather two-dimensional and says he doesn't have as much depth as one might think. And so Heppner says he has to search for Lohengrin's darker side, as you heard him just say a little while ago. Like the prelude to Act One, the joyous prelude to Act Three has long been a favorite in the concert hall. But its festive fanfare for brass and the pulsating strings couldn't set a more different mood from the prayerful prelude to Act One. Using Lohengrin's bridal chorus along with the wedding march from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream dates back from 1858 when Queen Victoria's daughter, Princess Victoria, married Frederick Wilhelm of Prussia. The combination immediately grabbed the popular imagination. As one writer put it, in its original context, the bridal chorus is a masterpiece of sweet foreboding and a prelude to marital disaster. The irony of its transformation into a much-loved public symbol of faith in the institution of marriage was not lost on Wagner. And Maestro Philippe Auguin has returned to the orchestra pit. And he's asked the orchestra to stand. You can hear the appreciation of the audience. And the final act is coming up now of Lohengrin in this live broadcast from the Met.